Stuart, it's funny actually. I often think of you when I'm about to do an interview because I think I remember something you were saying about when you interviewed Thurston Moore, Sonic Youth, for an imaginary fanzine.
I can't imagine how you know that detail.
Yeah, but well, you know, I know that detail, and it's something I often fear myself at that moment when you ask a first question and the person you're asking it of starts to yawn. I do.
Well, you see, there's not going to be any yawning here. I'm your perfect subject because I know what it, I know what it feels like to be the interviewer.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping you were going to say. You don't not to yawn. First, let me ask you, what stage now is the God Help the Girl project at? Where are you at with it in terms of what you hoped it would become?
It's kind of going along on two different levels. On one level, we've got the kind of the band aspect, the live aspect. The record's gone out. Mm. And we're a little bit reluctantly, I'm going to do a few shows because I don't really know how it's going to go.
Yeah.
It almost took on a bit of a life of its own. And the girls, Catherine, Alex and Celia, really wanted to do some shows. And I felt that they'd put in a lot of work for just this putting this record out. So I thought, it would be good to sort of have some fun with that. But the other strand is that on a daily basis, I'm getting up and reshaping the script. I'm working on my third draft now.
Okay, so the film is still some way off, is it?
It's still somewhere off, but it's a living reality.
You're definitely going to do it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting what you say about the singers having their own voice, so to speak, because I've loved watching this process from afar, so to speak, because you've kind of got involved with the idea of auditioning singers and the weird kind of power that involves, especially when you choose singers to fulfil some kind of fantasy, and then, of course, they want to, you know, follow their own destiny, hence the fact that you're going to end up doing some live shows.
Oh, definitely. They step out of the pitch and then they throw you about like a wet dish towel.
And what did you think when you put that ad in the local paper advertising for girl singers? What did you think was going to happen?
I was confident. It felt like precisely the right thing to do. It was just I wanted to start locally. I wanted to see what would happen. We didn't put our name on it or anything like that. And yeah, we got a good response, and it was a really high caliber of people that came forward.
Yeah, I mean, was it a bit dangerous? I mean, I think you specified that you didn't want any Celine Dion wannabes, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. I think the way the advert was placed, what it said, and the way it was tucked away in that particular magazine already sort of cut down the sort of people who were going to actually find it and apply.
Yeah, so it was like a filter already.
Absolutely.
And did that work?
Yes, I think it did work because the people who came forward had really good taste, good voices, and they got it.
Yeah, I suppose the other filter was the list of names that you used. I think Twinkle was in there, wasn't she? And
yeah, Twinkle, which was kind of Morrissey's choice from the 60s, and a bit Renetson as an obvious choice. And Friend and Lover, I love that kind of guy-girl thing.
And so you kind of had a very particular picture of what you wanted to do. Now, when they all came forward, how many came forward?
I think maybe about 20 people. I think I auditioned separately after that.
Out of how many? Or was it only 20?
That from that initial small advert, there was only maybe 20 or 25 that came forward.
Yeah.
It wasn't until we did the kind of internet thing quite a lot later that we got bigger numbers.
Yeah. And what was the process then? I'm very interested in how you kind of went through this idea of selecting singers, because we live in an era very much now of that being kind of part of the hyper commercial world, don't we? You know, singers coming forward, being auditioned, having their dreams made true. And you've done this kind of strange, shadowy version of it in your own way, in your own universe.
Exactly. If that fellow Simon Cowell, if he's like Sauron, then I'm like Gollum sneaking in the shadows. I don't know. I get up and I do what's on my mind, and I follow the process through. And there didn't seem to be any other way to do it. It just, this was suggested by the process that I had started. So, but the internet thing didn't happen till a couple of years later. The reason being that when I started the process, it took longer. Then Bill and Sebastian went back to make another record, toured the world. Mm. And then, so by the time I came back to do God Help the Girl, things had moved on quite a lot. And I thought, well, I really should cast the net a little bit wider. Also, I was kind of thinking, because by this stage it was a film, by 2006 I started writing the script. I thought perhaps if I got somebody with the dramatic intentions, then this would be a bonus somebody who could act as well as sing.
Yes. You kind of ended up, I guess, putting the soundtrack out first, sustaining the idea that it has that element of the fantasy, you know, the idea that you come up with imaginary song titles in an imaginary world and don't actually ever do that thing. There's a kind of constant deferral. I mean, I was wondering whether there was an element of that this was just a way of helping you shape and structure a particular idea, you know, with the idea that eventually it would become a film, or whether in the end, you know, you just decided to put the music out first to help you get to the film.
Well, let me assure you and anybody else who's listening that nothing is ever planned. I mean, with a process this kind of streaky and long, you can't really plan anything. And that kind of fantasy business, I was trying to avoid like the plague, because I just wanted to do something straightforward that worked, that led to making a film, making my first film. And so I didn't want the music to come out first, but it just kind of leapt ahead, as it would, because I know what I'm doing with music. So it sort of leapt ahead, but in the end, it wasn't a bad thing. You know, John and I, my manager, we decided to put this out, and it was the right time for it. And it's given it a kind of a life, and helped me to get on with the film in secret.
Yeah. Going back to that idea of the X Factor world, the Simon Cowell world, and the way that they've appropriated the idea of what pop is, and they're always full of this idea of looking at certain people and saying, you look like a pop singer, you sound like a pop singer. And again, what I like about this is that there's that almost cultural critical role you're playing to point out actually that the idea of a pop singer and indeed a pop voice isn't necessarily what those people are suggesting that it is.
Well, yes, I just gotta follow my own nose. I've never seen any of the Pop Idol X Factor programs, so I don't really know what their idea of. But mind you, I'm not complete naive. I've seen magazines, I've seen pictures on the internet, and even so, I've had a lot of sort of underground indie criticism for people saying, "Oh yeah, well, your girls aren't exactly ugly," but you know, they were genuinely they were the three people that were actually in from the start. Very early on, and they were the best singers, and they were simply the best for the job. So again, you just follow your nose, and that's what you end up with.
There's a weird thing going on there, actually, which I hesitate to enter, but I'm going to anyway. The idea of if you've got in your head this pop aesthetic about what a good voice is, and that involves a certain kind of, let us say, existential glamour, it is often the case that visually there will also be a hint of that as well, if you know what I mean. So that one thing may indeed connect with the other. So the fact that what you've got, so we say, the female singers are easy on the eye, it in a way comes from their vocal sort of sound, if you like.
I mean, a good voice is a good voice. There was one other voice that we came across later on in the process, a Swedish band called Those Dancing Days, and I heard one of their singles, and I just thought it was sensational. And so we tracked down the band, which wasn't hard to do since they'd had a hit in Sweden. And we got in touch with those guys, and we've got the singer in to do the next single. She's going to do the next God Help the Girl single, which is slightly unrelated, but she's got a fabulous voice, and I mean, she's pretty and everything. She sings in a band. I don't know. I don't make the rules up.
But you make your own rules up, though, don't you?
Yeah, I suppose so.
And within those rules, what is it that you like to hear in a female pop singer?
Well, for some reason, the words of that Julie Andrews song come to mind. You know, the how do you pluck a rainbow from the air? So, I mean, how do you describe a female voice? How do you describe pop music in a few phrases? It just does it for you instantly. It can be powerful. It can be sort of sensual. I don't know. It's just something. It's just raw something coming out of the speakers.
But that sort of sense of an identification with a certain type of personality is very key with the kind of music that you make, and the singers that you've used on God Help the Girl, you can instantly identify that you have a very specific pop aesthetic, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm absolutely led by character here. I suppose if, you know, you were to examine me like a patient or something, then you might say that I'm obsessed by this character, this central character of Eve, and it's the thing that's keeping me driving on. And she changes chameleon-like, and of course Catherine, who sings the main vocal, she became Eve for the singing project, and she lives in Edinburgh. And you know, sometimes I go through and I sometimes I get stuck with a script and I say, all right, Catherine, what do you think of this? You know, I'll run it past her. What would Eve do? You know, and she's very helpful in that regard. And we're pals. And I mean, she was through in Glasgow last night. We were just hanging out. So yeah, it's like, I suppose that kind of life becomes art, becomes life sort of business.
And what about the idea of discovering? I mean, was there ever an element in you, with you in this process, Cowell-esque like, that you were interested in discovering new talent and developing that? Or is all of that something that just happens by the way once you get into making a successful project?
Yes, I think, by the way, there's I wouldn't go out of my way to discover for the sake of discovering, like you're wielding some sort of power. I was always, for some reason, I'm vaguely against pulling people out of other bands, and although I've just mentioned those dancing days, but they seem to be at a fledgling enough stage that it seemed tasteful to do that sort of thing. I'm just not even into this kind of you sort of you buy into another band's sort of credibility or fame or something like that, and then you form this indie super alliance. I think that's vaguely sickening to me. Well, it's not sickening to me, but I think it's rare that something will become greater than the sum of its parts. And I think this goes all the way back, and you know, to variety shows or whatever. So I am into digging up sort of new people. Because I think you can, in a purer sense, you can find exactly what you're looking for, and you can mold them. And I'm not saying this in a bad way, because if you want to get into this sort of stuff, I mean, Catherine is an actor. I mean, she is an actor, and that's why she's best at the minute for this role. She did change, and she became kind of perfect for it, or she just became great for the role of Eve.
So you'd taken on the role of director as well in that sense. You know, it's very much that you're kind of directing these characters and directing the voices.
I'm directing the voices because I'm directing the film. I think maybe, you know, I'm putting the record out there, and I think it's asking a lot of people to come into it and embrace it. I would be suspicious of it myself. I don't know if I would buy this record if I was a young sort of, you know, upcoming indie punter. I don't know if I'd risk it.
So, what would the upcoming indie punter think of it then? Why would they be suspicious?
Well, anything conceptual, you know, anything that's just kind of halfway there. Obviously, if anyone from the record company's listening in here, they're thinking, well, what the hell? But no, I'm being serious. You know, I put it out there, and it's a lot to ask, because you're asking to buy into this kind of notion and stuff, and it's half baked at the minute, and that sort of fuels me on to making this film. And it's not going to be easy. I mean, making a record is easy compared to making a film. There's so many elements, but you know, you've got to try something new.
And why do you so much want it to be a film?
That's a good question. I like films. It just was thought up as a film. I knew that once I start to join the songs together with the story, I knew as soon as I could see the three main characters that I'd never go back, and that I had to do the picture.
And is there also something dangerous about, as you go along, piecing it together, putting it together, making the music, that there's so much of you, to an extent, talking about it and planning, although you say it's in secret to an extent, but on the other hand, you know, it's very much out there, that this also becomes an extra pressure, because the expectation of you delivering something that, as you say, you know, there's something a little risky about it, but the very nature of exposing that is in itself an added burden.
I think the main danger is actually boring people. Boring people talking about something which you're just kind of halfway through. But I must admit, I'm no closet scribe. I find this really hard. I've been on too many stages. You know, I couldn't even get through a university degree. So for me to, like, this, you know, this is serious work for me, getting up every morning, like, trying to knock this into some sort of shape. It's like doing a dissertation. So I've got a blab about it, and I blab about it to my wife, to Catherine, to anybody who'll listen in the pub.
You're kind of making it real for yourself, you know. You're actually cornering yourself, so you have to deliver.
That kind of thing, yeah. Put myself under enough pressure.
And you wrote that sort of strange little editorial, I think, for The Guardian, you know, where you just, I don't know whether what that was, whether you were just asked to do it or whether you just popped up yourself. expressing your sort of feelings about what it's like to have been in a group for quite a while, etc. You know that editorial you wrote that little.
Yeah. Well, the Guardian asked me to, they asked me to write four kind of blog things to go along with it. They're very nice. And well, I mean, I just sat down and wrote something, and it seemed to get a lot of people kind of angry, which was, it was sort of puzzling to me. But then I didn't, well, first of all, I didn't realize, I'm kind of naive, I didn't realize people could respond straight away, and I had to laugh because it was a fellow who wrote, "I read this just because I thought it would make me angry, and I wasn't disappointed." you got. I mean, you've got to love that.
How's that world affected Bella Sebastian? Bella Sebastian very at the heart of that idea of those kind of people that will go online and register their opinions, thoughts very quickly, responding very quickly to something they love and indeed something they hate. You know, it's something that you've been very part of, that obsessive fan idea that is now coming into its own as as life
Yeah.
gets more and more democratized. I wonder, how does that actually affect your own mentality and your own sort of motivation for making music? The fact that there's this very strange instant response to everything that someone like you does, if you care to check it, you
That's
know.
interesting. I think probably you could be a better judge of that, being on the outside and also having the being able to see the whole scope of pop history, like probably nobody else. I think maybe you can sort of see the shifts there. For me personally, we've always had that. We've always had that right from the start, when we were writing letters back to the first people who were trying to buy the records, and then the internet very quickly came online. So it feels like we're just scrapping away. They just it feels like part of the family. It feels like part of this, the whole thing that we're involved with. And to be honest, we use it, but we don't use it. We don't use them. We use it to have fun, which sounds a bit naive, but we have fun with it. We organize stuff. We have fun for ourselves, and we have fun for the people who follow our music, so it's good.
So how would you say that God Help the Girl fits into the kind of narrative you were talking about with yourself in that Guardian blog, about your own, 15-year, 20-year history of making popular music now? How does God Help the Girl fit into that?
I'm not really sure. When I was talking about, I think I mentioned glamour in the, and it's sort of misconstrued. I think what I'm thinking about glamour is just quality. It's just something. It's a dream inside my head that, and I get touched every day by things that move me. Whether it's, I mean, for God's sake, I was watching Pretty in Pink again this afternoon. I'm no highbrow person, and I'm just. Because I'm kind of timing it, I just kind of watching the scene over and over and timing out the scene and thinking, how long is a scene, and there's a lot happening and stuff like that. And it moves me, just the way it works and stuff. And I'm moved every day by small elements of art and music. And that's all I'm talking about. That's all I'm a thrill chaser. I just want to do, I want to capture that kind of stuff and present it and hope somebody else will get that buzz.
But is it still kind of in a funny sort of way possible to do in such a self-conscious age? I'm wondering, in terms of what we were just talking about, the fact that you're constantly surrounded by people responding to what you do, that you almost it's almost very difficult for you to create a kind of isolation because you're constantly aware of a buzz around you of people, directing you in terms of how they think you are, that you might not necessarily be because they've established such an obsessive identification with you.
There's not actually a problem. I mean, it's not every day that I'm writing blogs for The Guardian. It's not every day I'm talking to you. It's quite a rarity, so I'll go back to, I spend all my time walking around Glasgow, like outside Glasgow. Sometimes I don't see a soul for the whole day, and I go over and over the scenes and what I want to do, and then I go and write it. And so there's not a problem there. If the idea and the notion, if the inspiration wasn't strong enough and it wasn't sort of coming through, then I wouldn't bother with it. I'd throw it aside.
And what about in a wider sense, the amount of pop music there now is in the world is obviously magnified by the commercial Simon Cowell X Factor side of it. Whereas once upon a time, there was something, even at its most popular and successful, there was something special and secret about pop music, which now is sort of being turned into something quite blatant and vulgar. And I just wondered if you ever, considered your own position within that, the amount of opportunities both in the alternative world and the mainstream world now for people to make music. It's very, very crowded, and there is so much music, isn't there?
There is so much music, but there's some terrific music. If I know there's three or four bands in Glasgow that I can go and see any night of the week that I really love, then surely it's the same all over the place. And I'm not talking about that stuff on top. There's always been the froth on top. There's always been the stuff that's appealed to the masses for different reasons. And I'm not being condescending here because, of course, sometimes it's absolutely terrific. But in the 80s, there was a real divide, and I dwelled in the underground, and I love that. I love all the stuff that never made it in the 80s, but not for the sake of it being rubbish, for the sake of it being pure quality. So I think that always exists, and it's true. I do sometimes wonder. There's young bands in Glasgow that I often meet up with, and we talk about stuff, and I scratch my head and I wonder, and I'm thinking, it's so much harder for them than it was for us 15 years ago, when we got started. How are they going to make it? But they're undeterred. They get up every day. They've got jobs. They write songs. They rehearse. They get out and they play to 15 people, and it's great. It's it's better than we were at the start. So I don't know. I don't really know the answer.
No, I've probably just been paranoid myself, you know. I can get pretty paranoid about the Simon Cowell X Factor world, you know, in terms of it sort of representing some awful pillaging of pop history. Whereas what I love about God Help the Girl is this sort of shining a light on that those sides of pop history that we need to cherish and celebrate, you know, whilst these big monsters tromp all over us. But then again, I do wake up thinking I'm probably being a bit over paranoid, you know.
I think it's always been the case. You've got to have something to sort of kick against. And then again, the God Help the Girl could be seen as being very conservative and very, staid. And whereas the stuff going on just now, big stuff and popular stuff, that's it's pretty cutting edge. It's pretty great. It's not all black and white.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, just to finish off, Stuart, I'm just intrigued by, you know, the idea of being the person that auditioned. You know, you mentioned words like it's a conceptual project, and that the girls are now encouraging you to go live. You know, I got this picture of you sometimes having established a very successful way of working for yourself that you'd kind of managed, you know, whether it was as easy as this from the inside, but you managed to control a way of working that really suited you, and made the music work. And then something like this seems to be, for want of a better word, you know, work. You've got to work at this. You've got to put it together. And is that something you felt at your time of life was important, you know, to really take responsibility in a way for something?
In my time of life,
Well,
well, listen,
you know what I mean. You
I
know
know,
what's
I know, but
yeah.
there isn't. It's true. There's you never. I mean, that is life. You can never get away from responsibilities. You can sort of piss around and you can indulge yourself, but you can only do it for so long, and then life will rush in. But it's a good thing that it does, and life rushes in, that it's got six legs and it wants to know what frock they're wearing on like Thursday night in Edinburgh. And it, I mean, I don't know what kind of frock.
Is that the kind of questions you're getting asked, is it?
Yeah, well, exactly. It's like they think that I've got this complete concept. I'm like, well, you pick the frocks and I'll write the songs.
Stuart, thanks ever so much.
All right, you're
And I
welcome,
wish
Paul.
you the best of luck pulling it off, man. I'm looking forward to it very much.
Okay, thanks a lot, Paul.
Cheers, Stuart, my
Cheers,
love.
bye-bye.